Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
Owl.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, or is it Thursday? It's Thursday, October 27th, 2011. Tech News Today is brought to you by the Epson Workforce Pro, the world's fastest two-sided printer, delivering high-speed automatic printing, copying, scanning, and faxing to keep your business running at full speed. Plus, you'll save on ink. The Epson Workforce Pro, check it out at Epson.com. And by Slingbox, which just turned your iPad into a television. Slingbox has an iPad app, so now you can watch your home TV on your iPad anywhere you take it. Check it out at Best Buy or Slingbox.com/TWiT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zakhtar.
I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we kick around the tech news of the day, try to make a little sense of it. Got lots of stuff to talk about. And thank goodness we have the editor-in-chief of ZDNet.com, Mr. Larry Dignan, joining us today. How's it going, Larry?
Pretty good.
You've been busy with the HP news, I would expect.
Yeah, just got off that conference call where they said a whole lot of, they said a lot of stuff, but they said a lot of nothing too, so. They're keeping the PC business.
That's right. The main thing they're talking about is they announced they have completed their evaluation of strategic alternatives for their personal systems group. That's their PC group. They decided the unit will remain part of the company. And then, as Larry just said, Meg Whitman had a call to answer questions about it. What did she say about WebOS?
She said they're going to make a decision on that pretty soon. It sounds like, well, they did say they're going to tablets again, and it'll probably be through Windows 8. I heard nothing that makes me think that they want to keep WebOS, which I can't blame them, because I don't think you can really build an ecosystem around it, right? I mean, there's just nothing there. So it's going to be hard to get apps and just hard to get traction.
So even though WebOS is part of the personal systems group, the upshot of this is it's still not safe. And we've seen a couple of big WebOS folks leave HP in the past week. So that's not any big surprise that they're keeping the personal systems group, but they're probably going to try to ditch WebOS one way or another and go with Windows 8 for all their tablets and everything like that. But do you think, I mean, they justified this saying strategic review indicated that the supply chain and procurement hit was too much to separate the PC business. And we know PC is really low margin. Do you think that makes sense?
Yeah, well, basically what they looked at was the supply chain, which basically, you know, you have more leverage over Intel and AMD if you're buying PC and server chips. So they're basically playing a volume game. And the PC unit accounts for like 31% of revenue for HP. So it's a lot to lop off. And if they lopped it off, then, you know, they wouldn't get good deals on screens and chips and motherboards and things like that, which would ultimately hurt their server business. But that's the justification. I think the other thing is they just didn't want to spend $1.5 billion to spin it off. And that's partially because they have no cash right now because they were dumbasses and spent $10 billion on autonomy. So they're kind of strapped for cash. So I'm not sure they could afford a spinoff, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's why Leo Apotheker got fired. He kind of drove him into having to get rid of the personal systems group, but they couldn't afford to get rid of the personal systems group. I think it's probably short term a good thing for HP. Like you say, it's going to make them some money. But what do you think down the road? Are they going to regret that they didn't spin it off?
Well, short term, they kind of have to keep it. Because Dell and Lenovo were just pouncing all over it. And Whitman said that on the conference call, too. She said, you know, she was talking to big customers, and they were like, look, uncertainty is not helping you guys at all. And they were basically taking their PC upgrades elsewhere. In the long run, the PC business is still really tough. And, you know, the margins stink. It's just hard to justify. I'm just not sure they need it if they're going to bet on software services and, you know, enterprise servers. I mean, because recall, they were trying to do an IBM move. And HP's argument this time for keeping a PC business is it's hard to separate the brand from the PC business. Well, IBM did it. And IBM was synonymous with the PC for years. And they kicked it over the cliff. So long term, I'm not sold to keeping it's a good thing.
Now, Whitman's only been in charge for, like, what, a little bit over a month, and she said she would take care of it within the quarter. That was pretty fast. It's been a little bit
over
a month.
Beat her own deadline, yeah.
And it's already pretty secure. You know that HP is, you know what they're finally doing. Instead of this ridiculous, we don't know what's going on, we're not going to have these weird ad campaigns where we're a really nimble startup if we spin off, which is a very strange thing to do in the newspapers. Did that a month ago when they announced they were looking for strategic alternatives. So at least, I think, even though it seems like they had to do this move, at least they have a direction, which is backwards. But
it's a direction, nonetheless.
Well, the one thing that Whitman said that I thought was pretty good is she said HP is just doing too much, and she wants to pare that down and do, you know, fewer things well, which I think is a good direction to take for them.
Yeah.
Because they're just all over the place. I mean, they have a ton of businesses, and it looks more like a mutual fund than a company.
Well, you know what IBM did so well was they separated their various divisions so that when they did spin off Lenovo or sell their PC business to Lenovo, they were able to do it with minimum damage because they had strengthened these other areas. It sounds like HP is too interdependent inside.
Yeah, well, they also said that, too. They said it would be just too hard to extract. You know, I think the big thing is when the former CEO, I just call him Leo because I butcher the last name every time.
Yeah, I just go ahead and mangle it. Yeah, but I understand.
Yeah, I just say Leo. So, you know, when he said he was going to spin off the PC business, I think everybody was criticizing it because the communication was a disaster, right? You don't say you're going to spin off a business without having someone to spin it off to. And that just made the business a sitting duck. So I think long term, I think, you know, most analysts and observers would probably agree with the spinoff is probably a good idea. The problem was they screwed it up the first time that they can't follow through on it.
I bet Meg Whitman and Reed Hastings will be having drinks soon about backtracking.
Yeah, well, Reed needs a little advice right now. So.
Yeah.
I'd rather be Meg than Reed.
Meg's like, I'm backtracking, but it wasn't my mistake in the first place.
Right, exactly.
All right, let's move on to Sony. Sony is going to buy out Ericsson, as we had suspected. We talked about this possibility before on the show. They're going to spend 1.05 billion euros. That's close to 1.5 billion U.S. to buy out Ericsson's half of the joint venture of Sony Ericsson. So going forward, Sony Ericsson will become a division of Sony. Sony also gets control of five essential patent families, eliminates some costs around ops and R&D and marketing and that sort of thing. Set to close the deal January 2012, and they're making a lot of noises that they want to be like Apple. They want to control the whole system so that they, I think they called it a four-screen strategy, where you get your laptop, your desktop, your TV, and your phone and your tablet. That's five screens, but I think maybe the desktop and the tablet or the desktop and the laptop count as one. But you get them all from Sony, and you'd have a unified experience.
That was a huge problem for Sony for a long time. They have those divisions. They kind of do infighting. Sony Music didn't want to work with Sony Pictures. Sony Pictures didn't want to get content to Sony's music stores. There was a whole mess with Sony Connect. I mean, for them to have to try to start.
Wait, what you're saying is bringing the phone company into Sony doesn't help any because the divisions can't get along anyway.
Unless they flatten out a little and they actually have some communications together.
They are bringing the phones into Sony Electronics. I think Sony Electronics plays around with itself okay, but it's the services.
The phones seem like they're just actually now a part of. You're probably going to see 3G connections in or wireless connections in their laptops, their tablets, their PlayStation portables. Like, I don't know if they're going to still do phones. If they did a phone, it's probably...
They're going to still do phones. They're going to do smartphones. That's what they said.
Right, yeah. But I'm just saying, like, the wireless technology is not that far different than what they were doing with their handhelds already.
Well, except they couldn't make phones.
Yeah.
You go ahead, Larry.
I'm just not sold on it for different reasons. One, you know, you do a four-screen strategy. Show me one person that has four screens from Sony. It implies you have to have a Sony TV, a Sony Blu-ray, PlayStation, and then, you know, toss in the Vio laptop and a few other things. Oh, and then this phone that no one's ever heard of. So at least no one in the U.S. has ever heard of. So I just, you know, it's a nice idea if you can integrate, but it's just a bunch of silos right now.
And yeah, it'd be very-
I don't see how these guys are going to talk to each other now that they have another unit to worry about.
To compare, for Sony to want to compare themselves to Apple is really tough because Apple, since day one, has just expanded into different electronics markets. Sony has been, I'm actually still like sort of a Sony faithful as far as buying TVs. You know, I'm one of those people who love Sony stuff, but like it certainly doesn't apply to mobile phones. I just wouldn't even consider it. Don't have a PSP. I mean, there's all sorts of Sony products and I'm like, oh, I'm sure they're fine, but not necessarily for me. It's not something that I need to have, you know, at this like unified four screen type thing. So how are they going to convince everybody that having a full Sony product line is so much better than what everybody's already doing?
Especially when you look at Apple, you've got OS X on the desktop, you've got OS X on the iPhone, you've got OS X on the iPad, roughly speaking. They're different variants, but they all play the same. They're all made by Apple.
Yeah.
Operating system and device. With Sony, you're going to have a Windows desktop with an Android phone and possibly an Android tablet. They don't have one unified operating system, so it's not as elegant.
Yeah, how do they get unified without having some sort of a universal OS that everything runs?
Maybe they need to buy an OS.
Oh.
Yeah,
what kind of OS?
Howard Stringer was asked whether he would consider the possibility of buying WebOS, and he said, never say never. So they could buy a WebOS.
Nice evasive answer. Larry, what do you think? Is there a chance Sony would buy WebOS from HP?
I could see. I mean, right now they're trying to put like a user interface over all these parts and devices. I don't know if the WebOS really saves them though, because they don't have glue, right? I mean, Apple has glue because they have that ecosystem.
Yeah, right.
You got iTunes, you got the App Store, you got things like that. Sony has some of it.
Yeah, they have Music Direct and Video Direct, I think.
Right, but none of it's like a hit, right? I mean, they have an ebook store too, but That's for the six people that use Sony e-readers. So, you know, it's I don't know if the OS gets them there because there's no ecosystem there either. And frankly, if you want to, you know, if you want a really nice mobile OS, maybe you just wait for RIM to fall apart a little more and then you buy QNX.
Yeah, buy BBX from them. And
yeah, that's a nice OS.
That's a great OS.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Going to waste. All right. Also, Nintendo announced their earnings, announced losses of 70.3 billion yen. That's about 925 million U.S. over the 6 months ending September 2011. Previous forecasts were that they were going to make 20 billion yen as profit for this fiscal year. Now they've changed that. They expect to lose 20 billion yen for the year. Even though they lost 70.3 billion this last 6 months, they expect that the holiday quarter will bear them back up. And for the fiscal year, they'll only lose 20 billion yen. That's about 264 million U.S. So the biggest factors in this, software sales were down. They aren't selling software as well as they used to. Device sales are okay, but the yen is really strong. So that's hurting them as well.
Yeah, those currency fluctuations screw up earnings a lot. And, you know, if the dollar ever gets stronger, we'll see it here too. But the biggest problem with Nintendo is the Wii's getting old. They came out with the DS3D, which to me is a migraine machine.
I think a lot of people have that perception, even whether it's true or not, and they're not buying it.
Yeah, yeah. Anything 3D, I run away from. So, and the other thing here is the iPod Touch. I mean, my 8-year-old had a DS, or still does have a DS, but you know, she wanted an iPod Touch. So that's kind of the game machine that's giving that thing a run.
I think that's Nintendo's biggest problem. I mean, we're just seeing the effects of them saying tablet, you know, iPad type games, iPod Touch games. They're not really good games. They're cheap little one-offs. We're not that kind of company. We don't want to be part of that ecosystem. Well, a lot of other people do. Certainly users want to buy cheap games. So if Nintendo can't kind of like get into that market, I don't see how they're going to reverse this slide.
And the Nintendo Wii's at the end of its life cycle. Don't forget, the Wii U's coming next year. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be able to sell as much software for that as people stop using it and start using other things. And with that strong yen pushing down earnings, I think that's all three of those things are combining. But yeah, they're not going to be able to rely on a Nintendo DS anymore to carry them through from one console to another. They're going to have to change their mobile strategy.
Can Nintendo move fast enough to make something like the Wii U come to market much faster, considering how old the Xbox 360 is, considering how old the PS3 is? Is this next generation Wii going to be enough to carry them over before the next versions of those other game consoles? And moving into mobile definitely seems like something they have to do. But, I mean, they seem very, very hesitant to do that. Are these numbers going to be enough to finally convince them, look, you need to start going further out? I mean, every time there's been quotes with Nintendo executives, it's been, we are not doing this. Is this going to change their mind, do you think? Or is this just going
to
be...
Well, eventually, I don't know. I mean, you can't stick to your guns and lose all your money. I mean, eventually, they've either got something up their sleeve that we don't know about, or, yeah, they're going to have to change their tune. I mean,
and the results just aren't bad enough yet. And you have an excuse because you have the yen.
Yeah, right. They could fool themselves if they want.
Well, let's say hypothetically Nintendo decided to take Mario Brothers to the iOS. I don't doubt that would be... I don't think it'd be Angry Birds, but it'd be top five for sure.
I think it'd be a huge hit.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
I mean, they can take all those characters, take them to a mobile platform, and just, you know, collect $2.99 nonstop forever. Because, you know, the character, they're almost like Disney characters, right? You got the storylines with the games, and, you know, they know gaming. So they're all these, they're all the casual games, right? And that's where the market's going anyway. So I don't know. I mean, I think if they ever take that plunge, they may not do it today, but if they do anytime, you know, next 3 years, I think they're going to have a lot of upside.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, I think they have to. I think they're only fooling themselves the longer they put it off. I don't know right. if internally they have agreed, to, you know, if they've said, well, you know what, this is our date when we will move to Android and iOS. But they need to be doing that. And I think they probably need to be making an iPod Touch competitor. They don't necessarily need to get into the phone game. They can make their money by selling apps that way. But they should come out with something that doesn't compete with the old Nintendo Game Boy platform. They need to compete with the iPod Touch. Apple sells amazing amounts of iPod Touches to people who can't afford right. phones. Nintendo could be playing in that space, I feel like.
Yeah, I could totally see that.
All right, let's take a quick break and thank one of our sponsors for today's show, our newest sponsor, the Epson Workforce Pro, the world's fastest two-sided inkjet printer. We've been testing it here at Tech News Today offices here at TWIT, and it really is pretty darn fast. Even from sleep, it can pick up and print so fast. Epson has engineered the Workforce Pro for productivity. Delivers high-speed automatic two-sided color printing, copying, scanning, and faxing. It's a multi-touch machine, multi-function machine, I mean. Keeps your business running at full speed. And Epson has designed the Pro to help you save on ink. Ink cartridges in the Workforce Pro have extra high capacity, and it gives you 50% less cost per page versus color laser. Workforce Pro prints from mobile devices like smartphones and tablets, and it works. Android and iOS both. Works fast, and none of these networking errors where you're having to find the printer. No, it shows up if you're on the same network and you just press print and it goes. Plus, 580 sheet paper capacity means you'll load paper less often. That's the Epson Workforce Pro. Check it out at Epson.com. Epson built to perform. And then we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. All right. A bill is coming through Congress that was, I think, proposed yesterday. It's getting a lot of attention today. 12 members of the U.S. House have jointly introduced the Stop Online Piracy Act. Calls for copyright infringing websites to be blocked by ISPs. In fact, that part of the act is called the E-Parasite Act.
I love that name.
So they've got a lot of rhetoric in this thing. And essentially, the way it breaks down, they're trying to do what the Protect IP Act failed to do when it didn't pass through the Senate. Any intellectual property holder can send a note to ad processors and block payments without any kind of court ID. If I think you're infringing copyright, I send a note to Google and say, you got to stop selling ads on this site. The government can then appear before a judge. Don't have to have the infringing website appear, but they can go before a judge and get an injunction requiring ISPs to block sites and get search engines to delist the site. They are also indemnifying ISPs who voluntarily, and payment providers, who voluntarily believe a site is dedicated to the theft of U.S. property and block the site without any kind of judicial oversight. So going far, far beyond, in my opinion, what we need to do to stop copyright infringement and creating not only the possibility of vengeful takedowns of other sites, but also could encourage alternate domain name systems to spring up so that if something gets blocked by one DNS, you could use another. That makes the internet less secure. Also requires sites to avoid confirming a high probability of infringing uses. So effectively getting rid of safe harbor, saying, you know what, sites are responsible for the content going over their pipes. I mean, ISP is responsible for the content going over their pipes. I think this is an absolutely horrible piece of legislation. You want to talk about regulating the internet, that's exactly what the Stop right. Online Piracy Act does.
Does bad legislation really shock you?
No. That's why I don't appear shocked, just angry.
Yeah, I mean, I just wonder how they're going to enforce it. I mean, it sounds like it's a tattletale system. And I just see it, A, being abused. C, it's not like the government's going to have resources to really track this stuff. So it might come out of the gate strong and then just...
But the ISPs are responsible. It's incumbent on them to avoid confirming a high probability of infringing uses. So they have to look at all the sites that they're hosting and say, well, that one might have a high probability of infringing uses, so we better block it just in case because we'll get sued. Mm-hmm. And if I'm the MPAA, I can just go and take down any site I don't like just by sending a note.
And the LA Times actually had a really nice analysis of this piece of legislation. And one of the things about the term sites is it's very vague. So if it's a page like on eBay, let's say there's one thing on that full site, like there's one page infringing, that could count as a site, which could have huge effects on something like the entirety of eBay or YouTube or anything like that, because the word site is so vague that you could take down much more than the intended page. So, I mean, it could have all kinds of unintended effects based on the language that's there right now.
Yeah, it's shaping up to be a disaster.
And
if it passes.
And it's got a good chance of getting passed because they've got a bipartisan support. So if you're thinking, oh, well, my party would never stand for this, well, guess what it does?
They agree on one thing.
Unless you're not a Democrat or a Republican like me, in which case then you don't have a party. But,
well, and if you were an ISP, and let's just say that you were willing to put in the time and effort to fight back, if this isn't going before a judge, if it's not going through a courtroom, then what's an appeals process?
Right. Exactly. Right. There's a counter notice process, just like the DMCA has. But you know how well that works. Mm-hmm. Somebody says take it down, you counter notice, and then it's up. Now the ISP has to decide whether they want to accept that counter notice or not, whether they feel indemnified, or they can just say, you know what, we're going to block you anyway because we think you're infringing
you're
and we don't want to get in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
The MPAA is backing this. The Chamber of Commerce of the United States is backing this. Pretty much everybody except a organization that includes Google, Yahoo, and some small ISPs called the Net Coalition. I got some big guns there in Google and Yahoo, but this is going to pass the House, I have a feeling. And then it's going to go to the Senate. Senator Ron Wyden stopped the Protect IP Act in the Senate. We'll see if this gets to the Senate chambers, if he can stop it in the Senate chambers.
Yeah, I mean, he's argued before about the problems of Protect IP being a First Amendment issue. I don't know if he's going to try this again with something like, what is this thing called? SOPA. That's what I'll call it, because that's the initials. Stop Online Piracy Act. Not a very sexy acronym, unfortunately. Not like Protect IP.
E-Parasite Act is much catchier.
The thing I really wonder about is, you know, will there be an agency to actually look over this thing?
There's a coordinator.
You know, I mean, the government, the bill with actually, the SEC, they can't even chase things down. So.
The bill asks for a coordinator, but that's the brilliant of this. They keep pushing it as a market-based approach. So the MPAA is actually your de facto agency looking over this because they're the ones going to take most advantage of it. They don't have to involve the government most of the time, and there's a coordinator named in the bill. And all the coordinator does is he takes the marching orders from the complainer, which is going to be the MPAA or the RIAA in most cases. He'll take that, go to the judge, get the rubber stamp, hand it back, and then they go to the ISP and tell the ISP they have to block the website, or they go to the payments processor and say, you've got to stop accepting payments from this website. And there's hardly any appeals process at all other than lawyering up and going to court and trying to stop them in court. But there's no way to stop it before that. You're going to have to sue to get your website back if you feel this has happened to you in error.
And I wouldn't be surprised at all if ISPs add a surcharge to pay for these lawyers they're going to have to hire.
Well, yeah, any costs involved in this will be passed along to you.
The compliance fee.
There's going to be a surcharge for sure.
Absolutely.
There has to be.
Now, this is, you know, the Protect IP Act got thrown out because it was too broad. And so what they did is they came back with an even broader piece of legislation. They did put a paragraph that says any part of this legislation that should not be construed to be violating free speech. They tried to acknowledge some of the criticisms about that.
There's a savings clause in a lot of different laws, okay? So the idea is that if one piece of the legislation is found unconstitutional, the rest of it still stays. But, I mean, that's after it's passed entirely and it's a law, and then it goes to the Supreme Court. So that's put in for much later on review.
They didn't have that in Protect IP, though. So
it's always smart to have that.
They've really dotted their I's and crossed their T's this time. I have a feeling that unless there is a big Occupy movement – against this bill, unless there's a huge lobbying effort from Google and Yahoo, this is just going to ride right through because there's very little opposition for it. So
you're calling for Occupy SOPA?
Yeah. Occupy IP, I guess. All right. Let's move on to what's going on at Nokia World, still happening in London, and some more news coming out of there. Michael Halber, Nokia's Executive VP for Location and Commerce, told Engadget that Apollo, which is the next Windows phone codename after Tango, will launch mid-2012, and he hinted it could be Windows Phone 8. He's been lobbying them to have NFC and positioning framework. Now, Engadget came back later and said some sources close to Microsoft said that timing is not right. I think a lot of people would love to see a Windows Phone 8 next summer. Microsoft also announced an event for November 7th in New York with Andy Lees and Joe Belfiore. So there's going to be more Windows phones coming your way, at least in the United States, next week. They're also doing some separate event in Herald Square. Are you going to go to that, Larry?
I might if I'm in the neighborhood. Yeah. A lot of those events just kind of make me cringe over time. So.
Should we spend time poring over the invite to see what it means? It's for a quote-unquote backstage event? Is it?
Well, actually, I saw the invite. It had a little phone with AT&T on the bottom, so it looked like it was some AT&T thing, and yeah.
It's a Samsung phone,
the Windows,
two AT&Ts.
The Windows phones, it's sort of, I mean, my thing, my whole takeaway with Nokia was, okay, I'm glad they move fast. They're showing signs of life. That little flexi screen thing they had was kind of cool.
Yeah, they still got their R&D chops. That's a good point.
Right. But, you know, at the end of the day, I just, you know, you can have dancing tiles in the streets and all this marketing mumbo jumbo. But, you know, at the end of the day, are they going to be able to drive these phones to where people buy them and have an emotional attachment with them? And I'm not so sure.
It's a pretty operating system, but yeah, you got to get people in the door and get them in their hands and get people buying them. They are giving 25,000 Windows phones to committed developers, so if you're for sure going to make some apps for Windows, get in line. You might be able to get a free Windows phone out of it. And the Nokia US website has the Nokia Lumia 710. That was the cheaper of the two Windows phones from Nokia that were announced yesterday.
Those cases you love so much.
All over the U.S.
Swappable
website.
Swappable backs on those things. I don't know why they'd want to go with the 710 over the 800, though.
No, I don't know either.
Maybe for price point, they want to get in the hands of a lot of people if they're going to get any of those phones out there. They don't want to have to charge a huge premium for a decent... What was it? 800 didn't have a front-facing camera, neither does the 710. So it's kind of strange why... If you're going to have either one, bring in the lower-end one, and it's a lot easier to accept a low price with no front-facing camera.
Right, because the 800, I guess, would be more of a direct competitor with phones they feel are strong enough so that not enough people would buy the 800, although it's definitely the cooler phone.
Yeah, I think in the U.S. they're definitely going to have to compete with price, or with price, because, you know, if you go into a Verizon store or any of these stores, I mean, they're incented to sell you Android and iPhone. And I don't know... You know, I just don't see, short of a lot of subsidies, a lot of marketing dollars from Microsoft and Nokia, how they're going to get the U.S. market rolling. And I think they have to.
Papa Nut says, seriously? People need to establish an emotional relationship with a phone? They said that in the chat room. And you know what?
Well, that's what they were talking about, right?
It works.
Mm-hmm. You got to capture that gadget lust right when you're about to buy it.
Exactly.
Right? Look at people with their iPhones.
Papa Nut probably makes rational decisions, but most people don't.
Right.
That's just one of the truths of humanity. Let's finish up with another truth of humanity. When a cable company makes an earnings report in the United States, they usually announce losing subscribers these days and then immediately say, but it's not because of cord cutting, it's because of the economy. And that's what happened to Time Warner. They lost 128,000 video subs, blamed the economy, maybe even would allow the competitors like DirecTV and Verizon might be stealing some folks away. But heavens no, it is not the internet. They want you to be rest assured no one is leaving cable to go to the internet. However, an interesting report from Sandvine came out today. They're the folks that reported that Netflix took up 20% of the bandwidth at peak times. They've got a new number for that. They now report Netflix accounts for 32.7% of all North American peak fixed access downstream content. So what that means is in the peak times, in the evening, when everybody's online, 32.7% of the bandwidth downstream is from Netflix. That's double HTTP. That's, you know, just your general website traffic. Three times YouTube and nearly four times BitTorrent on the downstream, although BitTorrent's still king of the upstream. They don't envision a scenario in which Netflix declines. They do think they might fall to some local competition and plateau. So they're speculating we might be at peak Netflix.
We're at peak Netflix. But back to the Time Warner story. Is it possible that they're actually right? The economy is pretty awful right now. People don't want to pay for cable. They see it as some kind of luxury item. Then they figure out, okay, well, now what do? I still kind of miss TV. Mm-hmm. So is there video online? I'll just go do that. Doesn't necessarily make you a cord cutter and say, I'm throwing out cable for the internet. You're just saying, okay, what else am I going to do? I got this thing. It's like a TV. I'm going to go navigate to YouTube. I mean, like, is that really that crazy?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's not what cord cutting is. It's you still want to watch some of these great shows. You just don't want to pay that $100 Comcast or Time Warner bill.
I think it's like saying I'm facing a firing squad, and I'm going to look at the one guy in front of me, and he's not shooting at me,
right.
Even though everyone else is. That guy's not shooting at me, so I'm fine.
I think it's how far that firing line is away from the cable companies. I don't necessarily buy the I buy the long-term story that cord cutting is going to happen. I don't buy it right now. So I think, you know, when you listen to Comcast and, you know, Cablevision and Time Warner, you know, Time Warner is kind of the weak sister of cable anyway. But they're losing subscribers to Verizon and AT&T, which is a factor in here. You know, I'm talking to you over Verizon Fios. I dropped Comcast as soon as I could. There are lots of foreclosures, right? I mean, there are a lot of houses that are just vacant and, you know, no one's moving into, no one's hooking up cable subscriptions. And then you have the internet. But I think with cable TV, there's just a lot of inertia. Like I couldn't see, I couldn't cut the cord because I need to watch live sports.
Yeah, right? I think
until I get the NFL streaming on my desktop in real time,
That's kind of the bellwether, isn't it? When you can get it all without blackouts, because you can get MLB.com. Right. I mean, you can get NFL on the PS3. You can get MLB.com without having a cable subscription, but you're always blacked out on the local stuff. Right. When those blackouts go away, that's the end. But when I say the firing squad, what I mean is like, yeah, maybe not a lot of people are cutting the cord because they're going to watch Netflix and Hulu. But they may be doing it to go to play video games, or they may be doing it to go and just be on Twitter and Facebook, or, you know, mm-hmm. there's so many other things. There's so many other factors to this. TV is not your only entertainment option anymore. And so, yeah, a small percentage are cutting the cord for Netflix and Hulu, and maybe not small enough for Time Warner to pay attention to. But what they need to pay attention to is it is a bad economy. And if I've got cheaper options, I'm going to go with the internet where I have unlimited options for entertaining myself versus your 185 channels that throw commercials at me every 10 minutes.
Right. Well, there is a set amount of time and money. And, you know, everything competes with TV these days, whether it's the internet, your iPad, Angry Birds. I mean, you only have so much time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think TV's in a bind for that, in that department for sure.
Well, so many of these cable companies are already ISPs as well. So hopefully they'll put more money and time into making their infrastructure faster. Like, I mean, I remember Fios in the East Coast. That was very, very fast. And Time Warner was really slow. So, I mean, I would switch based on that alone. I don't even care about the television aspect.
Yeah, right.
I would switch because of the faster internet. So hopefully Time Warner's, if they really think internet is a component that they have to compete with, if it's Twitter or anything, get a faster connection going.
All right, let's check out.
They won't.
Yeah, no, I think you're right.
They won't.
Let's move on to the news fuse. The FCC approved changes to the Universal Service Fund, finally, that will be used to build broadband networks and bring mobile coverage to rural locations. Previously, the USF was used for bringing landline access, POTS, to far-off places. The program will create 500,000 jobs and bring internet access to approximately 7 million people.
A post on theunderstatement.com took a look at the state of Android updates by tracking 18 different Android phones shipped in the U.S. during July 2010 and October 2011. The stats aren't pretty. 7 of 18 of the devices never ran a current version of Android, and 16 of those 18 will not get Ice Cream Sandwich. The post goes to question why updates don't occur, considering third parties like CyanogenMod can bring the latest versions of Androids on handsets the carriers leave in the cold.
Yeah, that chart's really depressing. I mean, take a look at it.
Yeah.
Google Apps users, you can rejoice. You can finally access Google Plus using your Google Apps account starting now, so shut up. It's the same Google Plus that everyone gets. Google also announced some new features for its social network, including what's hot at Google Plus, photo filters, yeah, and graphical ways to see analytics. So if you want to see how your posts spread, you can see that.
Did you just tell me to shut up?
Yes, I did.
Well, I'm going to now, happily.
Dropbox announced Dropbox for Teams today, a premium service that gives up to 5 users 1 terabyte of space for about $800. Dropbox for Teams also brings tools so IT admins can set up rules and permissions. Additional people in storage can also be added for a fee. Otherwise, the service will work pretty much the same as the old Dropbox does for everybody, with files staying in sync on your desktop and your smartphone.
Okay, I'm going to start talking again. YouTube will unveil new channels as early as next week, according to the Wall Street Journal, citing people familiar with the matter. Oh, those people, they know everything. Google's paying content partners like News Corp, Shine Reveal, Electus, and Tony Hawk more than $100 million to bring in original content to its video site. The Journal says that there'll be about 20 categories organized by interests such as food and news and comedy. Could make Google TV pretty interesting. Live Google television.
Not a competitor for cable. Not a competitor for cable at all, right? Facebook's introduced some new safety features. The first is a trusted friends feature. In case you get locked out of your Facebook account, Facebook will send a code to your friends so you can get back in with a combined code. The other is offering users the option to have a password for Facebook apps that can be different than your main Facebook password. And you're going to need those new security features because Nathan Power, a researcher at CDW, discovered a vulnerability in Facebook that would allow people to send each other malicious apps. The problem was reported to Facebook on September 30th, and they're working on it.
Facebook also announced a nonprofit foundation that will run the Open Compute Project today at the Open Compute Summit. Open Compute Project aims to make data centers more efficient by adopting openness in design. Facebook is just one of the members that make up the consortium behind the project. That also includes Dell, Red Hat, Asus, but does not include Google yet.
Warner Brothers is attempting to hammer one nail into the Blockbuster coffin, but Blockbuster's still got life.
Not dead yet.
WB wants the video rental chain to accept a 28-day delay from DVD sales to availability of rental. Netflix and Redbox currently abide by such a delay, but Blockbuster won't go along, and Warner Brothers has refused to sell films directly to the chain because of it, forcing Blockbusters to get those movies elsewhere. Meanwhile, Blockbuster's starting VOD on Facebook. No Warner movies expected there.
No, and I wouldn't think so.
Hackers have owned U.S. satellites, and they aren't script kiddies. U.S. government satellites were compromised at least 4 times in 2007 and 2008, possibly at the hands of Chinese computer hackers with ties to the country's military, according to the excerpts from the U.S. China Economic and Security Review Commission's annual report.
Snappily named.
That's a real quick one. Bloomberg got a hold of the report, and the affected satellites are used for Earth, climate, and terrain observation.
Let's move on to the randomizer.
Randomizer.
So geekgot.com reporting on a flexible e-paper from AOU that you don't have to plug in to charge. How is that possible?
On the back is a bunch of solar panels. So this e-ink is very, or e-paper is very low power to start with, and to even change pages, pretty simple. The fact that this has solar panels on the back can power this thing pretty much indefinitely. So you could just keep reading on this thing forever. And it's flexible, which is,
unless you're in the dark, which you can't read anyway because it's not a backlit.
It's not like it's backlit. Yeah. No.
It does look pretty cool though.
Yeah, this looks pretty awesome, and so they've got it showing like the battery life and the it's getting like 130 megawatts from solar, according to this display here anyway. Flexible photovoltaic battery on the back of the sheet, so it does have a battery. You just never need to
it's
plug
very
it in.
Thin.
1000%.
6-inch display, resolution 800x600. I mean that's good enough. I mean, especially if you can do like unlimited page turns, you can have really large print. What difference does it make about the resolution?
Yeah.
All right, give it 15 minutes before there is a saving the newspaper story.
Yeah, exactly. Finally, newspaper saved by solar e-paper.
Yes.
I want that.
There's always a savior somewhere.
I want this thrown onto my lawn
every morning.
And then they pick, and like the milkman, right? They pick up the old e-paper and take it away.
It's not the way it works, Tom.
Is that not right?
No.
Does that not make any sense?
No.
It's a very strange view of the future.
You're going backwards.
All right. Maybe not.
HP style.
It's that hybrid.
Yeah. Or Netflix. Yeah.
Let's take a break and thank our sponsor, Slingbox. Slingbox brings your home TV anywhere you've got an internet connection. And just in time for the holiday, Slingbox introduces their new iPad app. You can watch your home TV on your iPad anywhere you take it. I use it right now during the World Series, saving my life. I can watch everything, you know, because World Series is blacked out when you try to get it through the apps and through the website. But I got Slingbox. So I pay for that, you know, that television channel, and it is through the internet. I can watch it anywhere. I can have it right here. I can have it in my car streaming. I can have it in the kitchen. I can have it in any room of the house. Anywhere you have an internet connection, you can see your television without paying any extra monthly fee. So check them out at Best Buy or at slingbox.com/twit. Slingbox on your home TV, now appearing on iPads everywhere. What's on the calendar, Sarah?
Incoming message.
Ooh, wrong one.
Hey,
incoming
Jason.
Calendar.
There we go. Incoming
you
calendar message.
Incoming calendar. All right, this is exciting. The Boeing 787 Dreamliner made its first passenger flight from Tokyo to Hong Kong that was on All Nippon Airlines. 240 passengers on board, 4.5-hour charter flight. But this plane is cool. Carbon fiber composite 787 says passengers get more overhead luggage space. It's very important for people. Bigger auto-dimming windows, full power, USB and iPod connections, touch panel LCDs, front of the seat, and more comfortable air pressure and less fuel consumption.
So more screaming babies.
We should end up saving airlines. Put the baby in the overhead compartment.
There we go. Yeah.
There's more room. They'll
we need some of silence in these planes.
Right. So that's fun. They're going to start commercial flights regularly at the beginning of November. Today, Apple's making movies available via iTunes in 12 new countries, including, but not limited to, Cyprus, Latvia, and Poland.
Hey, congratulations.
Enjoy. The iPhone 4S is expanding as well to 22 countries tomorrow. That's the 28th, including Austria, Italy, Norway, Slovakia, Sweden, Switzerland, just to name a few. And get the PS Vita on February 15th. If you're willing to pay for a $350 bundle that comes with a case, comes with a 4 GB PS Vita memory card, and a game. Are you? Are you willing?
I like it.
Punk?
One week earlier.
Jason?
Yes?
Now we can check incoming. Oh, wait.
Incoming message.
Got a voicemail from someone who has a very special relationship with the new IBM CEO. Here it is.
Quick right call now. To let you know that her name is pronounced Rometty. Virginia Rometty rhymes with spaghetti. I know this because I'm Michael Rometty, the frugal computer guy. I've got a little site that does free tutorials and free software like LibreOffice. And my cousin is the CEO of IBM. What can I say? My family's not really into nepotism. Just
Rometty.
I'll probably send her resume after she becomes CEO after the first year.
Yeah, why not?
But thanks for mentioning that.
Have a great
day.
All right, man.
What did we call her? Rometty?
I called her Rometty.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was me. So
Rometty.
Rometty. I got it.
Well,
thank
hey,
you.
We'll know the name
from
now on.
The cousin should know.
Yes, exactly. On to the emails, Sarah.
Mike the diplomat says, hey, Tom. Mike the campaign worker, Mike the lobbyist, is now Mike the diplomat. I live in Uganda, and your discussion of the dual sims made me lol. Dual sims are popular here, and some of the uses, such as personal and business, are common. That said, the most common is a separate number for the wife and the girlfriend. I don't make this stuff up. Just the way it goes.
That's funny, yeah.
Interesting.
So you always answer the phone,
Uganda,
hi, honey.
Uganda, looking better and better.
We had Simon Dingle from South Africa on the show yesterday. He didn't mention this.
He didn't mention that at all.
One of the uses.
Maybe it was understood.
Yeah, maybe so.
Email from Michael Lopez. Just wanted to share my dedication to TNT and Security Now, those podcasts. Today, my wife went into labor this morning. Well, when it came time to push, I was listening to TNT first, then moved to Security Now. My wife did not notice my Bluetooth earpiece. Michael Anthony Lopez was finally born at 10:18 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on 10/26. Just had to share. Listening to both shows really helped me during this time.
And bold move.
He brought in. He sent in a picture.
Aww.
That's Michael.
Aww. Happy baby.
Not named Tom Merritt.
Yeah, I was going to say.
No, don't do that. Yeah, Michael's a much better name. Larry, would you have been able to get away with that?
Not a chance.
No, Jason?
No. Are you kidding? No.
I'd say the risk is just huge.
Well, yeah.
Can you imagine where she's like, this hand, I want you on the other side. And he's like, no. I just want to stay on this
I'll
side.
Just stay over
I just need
here.
To find out
just
about, wait,
look,
is Dooku
are you this
really
way?
Troublesome? Wait, no.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right. Thanks to everybody in our Reddit who helped submit stories, all the folks who submit stories. And even if you submit stories and they don't get picked up, it's not being gamed. There's too many stories being submitted, so they don't all get picked up. But definitely vote things up or down if you like them or don't like them. Thanks to Javi Chuela Condolce, Cheshu, We got Draconos in there, MacBytes, Captain Kipper, F1 Ben, and more. It's technewstoday.reddit.com. Over 3,000 people helping us figure out what to cover each day, and we appreciate it. And thank you, Larry Dignan, for being on the show. Let folks know what you're up to over at Between the Lines and all the stuff at ZDNet.
Yeah, just go to ZDNet.com. I'm around. And I'm L. Dignan on Twitter.
Excellent. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call and leave us a message. We're always listening. We appreciate it, even if you aren't the cousin of IBM's new CEO. 260-TNT-SHOW is the phone number. Darren Kitchen's back with us tomorrow for Friday. We'll see you then.